Okay, next we have John Cowell. John is chair of the PUP, but I think he wants to say tonight that he's speaking on his capacity as a city councillor. So, John, of course, yours.
Thank you, Robin. I suppose I have a slightly different perspective on the flags and the protests. And I think the background to it has been fairly well rehearsed previously, but at the risk of boring you, I'm going to talk a bit about the background issues that I think are fundamental to understanding the flag protest as it continues. The first factor is that the people who are most involved in the protest feel utterly alienated from the political system. They feel that they have been that they're not heard, that they're not represented, that politicians don't care what they think and treat them by and large as irrelevant. And so there are people who feel that they have not had a voice, and they feel that in this instance, this is something that they feel extremely strongly about, and therefore they're going to make their voice heard. And this is the way that they found to make their voice heard, and they certainly made their voice heard. Second point is that the people most involved in the flag protests come from communities of deprivation. They come from areas where educational achievement is poor, if not abysmal, where employment opportunities are minimal, where health inequalities are rampant, where mental health problems, addiction, alcohol abuse is part and parcel of everyday life. There are people who don't have much to really enrich their lives, and so for them their culture is extremely important. As I said to one of my friends, they don't have the option of going off to a Bruce Springsteen concert the weekend. They simply can't afford it. So these are communities that really are the bottom of the pile. And when it comes to their culture, they feel very strongly about it. The third thing is that they feel that their culture has been stigmatized, denigrated, treated as worthless, treated as threadbare. Now, let me ask you, has their culture been treated and denigrated as second class, worthless, substandard? That's their experience. Whether you or I value it or not, important elements of their culture are things like parading, food bans, the armed forces, homecoming parades. Employment is so difficult to get in loyalist communities that in some families, 3 out of 4 boys join the army. Many of the protesters have had sons who have served in Afghanistan. So when it comes to a homecoming parade, that is something really important. They are extremely proud of their young men and women who have served in the British Army. The song, Wearing the Poppy, these are all things that are really important, and yet on all of these issues, they've been pegged back and back and back and back over the past 3 or 4 years. I think last summer is testament to it. Lots of evidence as to how they find themselves being more and more restricted. So whether you or I value or appreciate their culture, that is their culture and that is their experience. Last month on the BBC website, there was a quotation: rising levels of poverty and scarce job prospects for young people could lead to fresh unrest on British streets. Now, that was Yves Dacour, the head of the International Red Cross, speaking about England. How pertinent that is to Northern Ireland and to Belfast in the past 3 months. Sure. The Good Friday Agreement enshrines full respect for and equality of cultural rights, parity of esteem, just and equal treatment for the identity, ethos and aspirations of both communities. Now, I put it to you that we've gone to great lengths to ensure that nationalists experience parity of esteem, but I would suggest to you that loyalists have experienced exactly the opposite, and they've found themselves increasingly being made second-class citizens. That's their perception. I'm not saying it's right. That's their perception. Richard Wilkinson's book, The Spirit Levels, says on the fly page, more equal societies nearly always do better. Well, I would put it to you that this society is full of inequalities. And the Flags protest is a manifestation of those inequalities, of communities who feel that they've been discriminated against, and they feel they have to do something to establish, to express their frustration and their difficulty.
Thanks for that, John. And now Trevor Renan from the Conservative Party. Trevor as well, used to the expectation of final whistle, so I'm sure you'll keep that time.
Thanks, Robin. And let me just pick on a wee bit from where John left off there. It really is what maybe has happened in the last couple of months has been a wake-up call to all of us. That we thought things were settling down. A lot of us were saying that things weren't going in the way that they maybe should have been going, and that we need to wake up to those issues. And I think it has been a reminder that those issues are there and they do need to be tackled. And many of those issues have been well identified by John. But first of all, we live in a beautiful part of the world. It's called Northern Ireland. The people are good, especially when you press the right buttons. When you press the wrong buttons, you see a terrible side to us, and we all know that. I often use the example of our best side. Is, I don't know whether any of you have seen the film The Impossible, about the tsunami happening in the Indian Ocean. But if you go back to that, when that happened, the Dean of Belfast, in the 2 weeks up to Christmas, had his container opened, his barrel opened, and £140,000 was put into various Belfast charities by the people of Belfast, which is a tremendous effort. When the tsunami happened on Boxing Day that year, he kept the barrel open for a further 2 weeks. And those 2 weeks, £1.25 million went in from the people of Belfast to help the people in the Indian Ocean. That shows what type of people we actually are. And that is often reported on by various people who come here and get to know us better. In 1998, we had an agreement. It was at the end of a period called the Troubles. We're trying to find a way for our society to move on. It established that the constitutional position of Northern Ireland was to be determined by the consent principle. So it could remain as part of the United Kingdom if that's what the majority of people in Northern Ireland determined, or that could change if the majority voted otherwise. All the polls since then have shown that it's highly unlikely if that constitutional position will ever change in my lifetime, or even if ever. But we have to share this place. And we also have to recognise that out of the Troubles there were no winners. We all lost. As a society, we all did badly out of it. But we have agreed to share, and that means that Northern Ireland is not as English essentially, but it's certainly as British essentially. And when you look to the future, it means it doesn't become any less British, but it does mean, though, it becomes more Irish. But we also have to define what exactly becoming more Irish means, and that's a challenge to us all. And it's particularly a definition of Irish. As I said one time many years ago, a definition of British, a definition of Irish. I had this debate with a nationalist friend of mine, and I said, what definition of Irish are you using? Because my definition of British includes you. And he laughed and he said, I'd get back to you. And I'm still waiting for that answer. And it is an important answer, because the key to the future is inclusion, that we want everyone to share Northern Ireland, this island and these islands. So what has been exposed is whether or not we are genuinely committed to a shared future, and a shared future where we all do well. Politics is also exposed by what happened at Belfast City Council, that it's not working. Now that's perhaps understandable in view of the history that we've had, but there's various issues, no CSI document, the issue around the flags, where we continue to press those old divisive buttons that play on the fears and the victim sense of victimhood that emanates from our past. We also have the impact of the conflict that we had, 3,600 killed, the impact on all the families, thousands injured, 20,000 in prison, 12,000 from the nationalist Republican community, some 8,000 from the unionist community, a balkanised society, the economy put in ruins in many ways. And the challenge is that if we've had a conflict or war, never got to a war here, but got to a conflict, then we've moved to a Cold War before the agreement, which was where you have a threat of mutual destruction. We then, after the agreement, we moved to a Cold Peace. But that's the sort of coexistence model, the shared out future that's being worked on by Sinn Féin and the DUP at this present moment in time. And that means there's no actual healing of the wounds. And that will break down. And what the challenge is, how do we move from there to a constructive peace where we all actually do well? So how do we do this? For a start, we have to find a way of stop pressing divisive buttons. That flag issue did not need to raise its head in the way that it was raised. It should have been sorted out. It was sorted out at the Assembly, and that should have been rolled out right across Northern Ireland and all the councils. Because it was also exposed that in many of the councils in Northern Ireland, that the flag doesn't fly at all. So it makes a cold place for those from a Union for British pro-Union tradition. And so they could have sorted that out. But we could look at ways, you know, designated days throughout Northern Ireland in all councils and all government buildings. Your flag is in Patrick's Day, or St. Patrick's flag and St. Patrick's Day. There's many other ways we could deal with these issues. But I've just run through some of the things that are there. All have been shown that they can be dealt with, but they are not being dealt with by our political parties. And that is the challenge they have to meet, but they can't do it on their own. They need society to help them as well. Identity, look at our sports. Do you support Northern Ireland? Do you support Ulster rugby team? Do you support the Irish rugby team, the British and Irish rugby team? Do you support the European Ryder Cup team? Or do you support, you know, an Ulster team in the GAA? Why not? We can buy into it. Rory McIlroy, Graeme McDowell, Darren Clark. The social issues that John talked about, those all need to be tackled. Parades, again, we need to find ways. 95% of them are resolved, and only a couple of percentage of them actually lead to any sort of problems. Those problems have been there for 100 years and they continue to be there for problems. Religion, we can sort of, the demonisation of the other has to stop, and that loyalists do have an issue, and a correct issue, sure, there, because they're too often demonised, instead of included as ordinary people. And I have to stop now. But there's a lot more there.
Many thanks, Dr. I'm on to Gerard O'Neill from Sinn Féin. Gerard, the floor is yours.
Thanks very much for the opportunity to speak to you this evening. It'll probably come as no surprise to people if I was explained to you that I came from a community that very much seen itself as being disconnected from the civic life of the city. It seen the city as a unionist city, seen the city as a Protestant city for Protestant people. And, you know, Christopher talks about, we'll make a comment about, you know, discrimination. You see, the fact of the matter is that the community that I came from was very much discriminated and had unfortunately a legacy of discrimination. And my parents, my grandparents were discriminated against, and I was brought into that community with a sense of disconnection, with a sense of having to stand up to the injustices that was thrust upon our community. And we brought our Republican politics to the City Hall, not to eradicate Britishness, not to do away with the fact that there is very much a British connection to this city, that there are many, many British and Unionist people who live in it, that we weren't about changing that, that what we were about was trying to work towards a balanced City Hall, a City Hall that reflected the views, wishes and concerns of all the citizens of the city, because unfortunately, up until we started to bring our politics to the City Hall, we didn't have that. So we never ever sat out thinking that we were going to go into the City Hall and destroy Britishness. We were going to go to the City Hall to bring about equality. Why be afraid of equality? What is so dangerous about equality? Equality represents all. It pervades an equal playing field. And that, in my view, is a challenge to the leadership of unionism, who can't get its head around what equality is all about. And the decision that was taken in recent times, and, you know, you went through the detail of that, but think about this. For years, my community was lectured on the democratic process. We were lectured and told that you have to accept the democratic right of the unionist British majority. That's the democratic process. You have to accept that. And, you know, once we took a democratic decision, once a decision was taken around the flag, we had a complete spin of that coin. We were told that it was illegal, that we couldn't have taken it, that it was undemocratic, and all of a sudden, the people that were lecturing us about democracy were faced with democracy, and they didn't know how to deal with it. And what they did, unfortunately, in not providing real political leadership, was that they marched their people to the top of the hill and left them there. Unfortunately, we've had the fallout, and we've seen that on the streets from that. Could you imagine for one moment that coin had been spinning around and Republicans had have been responsible for some of the mayhem that we have seen in this city in recent months? Could you imagine the response that you would get from right across all spectrums? Could you imagine the outfall from all of that? The reality is that the DUP had no leadership to give to its people. That wasn't nationalists or Republicans' fault. The fact of the matter was that once a democratic decision was taken, the DUP had no way of managing the fallout from that. Now, so the Republicans want to see a city for all. They want to be inclusive. They want equality for all. People should not fear that. We want to move forward. When Alex Maskey became mayor of Belfast City Council, one of the first things Alex did, which people thought was controversial at the time, he brought the Irish national flag into his parlour. Now, what he didn't do, he didn't remove the Union flag, because Alec accepted that there were two traditions in this city, and that those two traditions needed to be respected, and they needed to be respected on an equal basis. And that is the way forward. Respect on an equal basis, and no one should fear that.
Thanks, sir. Rebecca Hall's a penultimate speaker from Labour. Rebecca.
Hi, sorry, probably many of you weren't up to me before. I'm the Youth and Student Officer from our CLP. Labour doesn't have a specific policy on this flag issue, but I think you can't deny that it's an important issue that needs to be addressed within a shared society, which Belfast is. I think we can all agree that actually this was a democratic decision made by Belfast City Council that they had every right to make. The reality is that actually I think the designated days is the best, it's the fairest, it's the most balanced policy that we can bring forward. It's a compromise between two communities in a shared city and a shared Northern Ireland. I think that if we're not going to address these issues of being a shared society, it's going to, speaking as a young person, speaking as a student, it's continuing the brain drain away from Northern Ireland. Young people, they have nothing here. They have nothing to look forward to. Employment prospects are poor. And you have to think in advance that you're going to have to bring your children up, bring your family up in a society that designates our unionists or nationalists. And a lot of people don't feel that, think in that binary way anymore. I think that the uproar after the council decision was poorly managed by politicians claiming to represent the wider Protestant, loyalist, unionist community, and that every party was responsible in their own way. I think for me this issue of the Union flag was actually symbolic of wider issues going on within working class communities all over Northern Ireland. I think it was brought earlier by John. I think that there's a lot of working class communities feel let down. There's nothing for them. No one speaks for them. The parties that claim to speak for them don't. They feel left out, let down, alienated politically and economically. So I think we need to start looking at actual bread and butter issues. We need to look at housing, health, jobs, education, welfare, transport. I think these issues are really affecting communities, and I think that's where Labour is more concerned with with issues that are affecting real people's lives rather than identity politics. We need to feel that a shared society is working for people and that austerity is hurting communities in Northern Ireland, and that we need to address that and that this can resolve identity issues. I think moving forward, we need to address the fact that designated days is probably a policy that we can apply over Northern Ireland. It's a compromise, and as I said before, it's that's what compromise means. I think the Good Friday Agreement means for me that this city has to compromise between its two communities and two beliefs, and there's a lot of room for that move forward. I'm going to ramble on that.
Actually, we're very concise, which I'm very grateful for, but thanks for that. And finally, John McAllister, until very recently from the Austrian Unionist Party.
Thank you, Ron. Actually, when you had asked me to do this, I wasn't on screen. I'm not meant to be here at all. So I haven't received any clearance from the policy or pressure. And I'm sure there'll be some disciplinary action. As we usually say in the Ulster Union Party, you can resign, but you can never actually leave it. I was going to pick up on your point that when you were struggling there with economic debt, I said, look, Labour never was much good on it. But thanks and apologies for being late. And if I do have to leave early, it's no disrespect to that part of routine. My wife doesn't know I'm here, and I have to get my mother to look after the two kids. But I need to get back before she gets home. First of all, on the flags issue, there's no one, I think, that from whatever your viewpoint in the flags, can look back at the last two and a half months with any sense of pride in what we managed to do to Northern Ireland. Whatever your view on it, whether you wanted to see the flag up every day or to see two flags up every day, whatever your view, there is no sense of pride. Our reputation around the world, the damage it's done to our economy, we even managed to get Rory McIlroy questioning whether he's going to go to the Rio Olympics, because he began to say, is he British, Irish, can he pick for himself, whatever he wants to be. I mean, it has been a disaster. Thinking of some of the points about discrimination, living out in the countryside, I know of a great discrimination. None of you people probably have even heard of Ross Island. So we know how bad things are out there. The flags thing, several things, could it have been handled differently? Could it have been handled better? Absolutely. I'm not a voter, or I don't live in Belfast, so I don't vote here. The leaflet campaign that the Ulster Unionist Party, the DUP, were involved in, my then party colleague Basil McRae asked back in a speech in Londonderry, talked about that being a problem back on the 16th of November. I asked at the party executive on the 8th of December. I still don't know how much involvement the UUP had in that, but whatever it was, we know that there were serious consequences for that. And it's how we get that sort of sensible civic unionism, sensible civic nationalism to do our business better. How do we find a way of confronting these difficult issues with very strongly held views on each side as to how you deal with that? I have no issue with wanting equality across the world. I don't fear equality. I prefer the phrase probably equality of opportunity. But I don't fear that. But when you do say that, you have to then come back and say, well, if designated days is right, why don't we do it across Northern Ireland? I represent the constituency of South Down. It has three council areas in it. Yeary and Moore don't fly a flag at all. Down District doesn't fly a flag at all. Banbridge District, I think, flies at 365. So how do you get something round about that? How do you start that discussion? How do you find a better way? The issue that was handled by Belfast was a disaster. Lisburn took this decision sometime in 2006, and did anyone even know that until, I think, Basil mentioned it in the radio? It just wasn't an issue. No problem accepting that the decision of democratically elected councillors in Belfast was a democratic decision. No issue with that. And the problem I have, say, as someone who believes in the union, is that unionism is a great ability sometimes to draw a line in the sand when the tide's at low tide, and we wonder why we can't hold the water back. The support for the union has never been stronger. Support against the United Ireland in the Republic is very strong at the minute too. So why do we get into this siege mentality of unionism with we're always so badly done by, we've, you know, phrases like chipping away at our Britishness. Most of the communities I feel that John Guy was talking about, we keep telling them they're losing something. We keep on reinforcing that they're losing something. I can see the timer on, don't worry. We need to look at some of that spirit of generosity. People who have actually stood out and made a difficult decision, except Alex Maskey when he attended and visited the Somme, Margaret Ritchie when she wore a poppy in Downpatrick, a friend of mine, Frank Feenan at Fine Gael TD, wore a poppy into the Doyle, Enda Kenny and Eamon Gilmore both attended Remembrance Day services in Enniskillen and here in Belfast. That is what I mean by the spirit of generosity. But you need to see that coming from both sides. And we need to change the mindset that this isn't just happening to one community or the other, but this is happening to all of us. And that's where I'd like to see us starting to move the agenda too. Thanks, Rob.
Thanks, Tom. Well, thanks to everybody on the panel for a very concise comments. I thank you for your indulgence. Also, thank you for the constructive tone of all the contributions. And hopefully we'll sustain that.